Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynn@pghcitypaper.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
Hello, and welcome to another Monday in this frightening year of 2020. It is, in fact, the last day of summer, September 21, and it is the first day we have spoken since the loss of the greatest woman jurist in American history. And I think we can drop the woman and say one of the greatest jurists in American history. We all suffered the gut punch in our own way, hearing about it. I had mentioned, I think, just a few weeks ago that she was always in my mind, on my mind, because I knew she was fighting to stay alive. And when she died, one of the things I thought of was how cruel it was that for her, even her death could not be as personal as our deaths would be or will be. No, she had the extra stress of trying so desperately to stay alive for us, for the country, and how that must have weighed on her, knowing she wasn't going to make it. I owe my entire career to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as does any woman who's out in the world. She lived in a world in which women were thought to be, I don't know what, airheads, capable of nothing more than bearing children and keeping men upright. Her own career was hampered because she couldn't find positions after graduating from law school because, well, who did she think she was? One of the most brilliant young attorneys coming out of the law schools that year? What did she think she was? She was a woman. And in fact, she was a woman with a child. She fought all her life as an attorney and as a jurist to make this country live up to its founding principles about equality. And she is the lawyer who persuaded an all-male Supreme Court that the 14th Amendment, its equal protection clause, must also include discrimination based on gender. That's when she changed my life. All the women who have served in the U.S. military owe it to her. She wrote the opinion in the case U.S. v. Virginia, which said that VMI, Virginia Military Institute's policy of refusing to admit women was unconstitutional. all of these encumbrances, all of these walls that had been built up and generally thought inviolate, right? Yeah, they're standing. That's just the way things are. She took on and breached those walls. An extraordinary woman. And she wasn't just a successful woman in her choice of profession. She was as successful as they come in her personal life, enjoying a clearly, remarkably loving partnership of a marriage with a man who she credited for her success. I'll read her words. "I have had more than a little bit of luck in life, but nothing equals in magnitude my marriage to Martin Ginsburg. I do not have words adequate to describe my super smart, exuberant, ever-loving spouse. Early on in our marriage, it became clear to him that cooking was not my strong suit. To the eternal appreciation of our food-loving children, Marty made the kitchen his domain and became chef supreme in our home. He coached me through the birth of our children. He was the first reader and critic of any article, speech, or brief I drafted. And he was at my side constantly, in and out of the hospital during two long bouts with cancer. And I betray no secret in reporting that without him, I would not have gained a seat on the Supreme Court." And that is an amazing story of how he actively, her husband, actively lobbied to have her on the court. That was not who Clinton had in his head. And before it was over, that was, of course, the nomination. One of the people in the White House then said, knowing what was happening behind the scenes as Clinton sought to find the right person for the seat, a guy named Ron Klain is, I'm going to quote, he says, "I would say definitely, and for the record, though Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have been picked for the Supreme Court anyway, she would not have been picked if her husband had not done everything he did to make it happen. He first went to the senator at the time, Daniel Patrick Moynihan. He enlisted him. He went after a lot of very respected people in the legal world and got them. And he campaigned. She got the greatest of husbands. A brilliant lawyer. A real man. Not feeling threatened at all by his wife and her success. In fact, doing everything he could to help her success. That is love. And my favorite thing that she said about her marriage, and again, these are her words. It's from a book that I do have Justice Ginsburg, my own words. She says that she's often asked in public life for advice. And she says, when anyone says, "Do you have any advice for us?" she always says this: "Yes, I do. It comes from my savvy mother-in-law, advice she gave me on my wedding day. In every good marriage," she counseled, "it helps sometimes to be a little deaf." And Ginsburg went on to say, "I have followed that advice assiduously." And not only at home through 56 years of wonderful marriage to Marty, I have employed it as well in every workplace, including the Supreme Court. When a thoughtless or unkind word is spoken, best tune it out. Reacting in anger, reacting in annoyance, will not advance your ability to persuade. Would that we took that to heart. I can't speak for you, I'll speak for me. All right, before we get to the hardball of what is happening since her death, I do want to say that the fact that she died, when she died, was particularly powerful for Jews, because she died as the sun set on the old year. She died before, right before the new year. This was our New Year's Friday night, Rosh Hashanah. Rosh means head in Hebrew. Hashanah, the year, head of the year. And she died at the last, in the last moments of last year. And I have to explain something. That on Rosh Hashanah, as Jews pray, and for the next 10 days, as we pray and pray and pray, heading into Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, we are praying that God will grant us one more year. And so for somebody to die at the, in the last moments of a year means that they were particularly loved by God. That even though it was inscribed at Rosh Hashanah, at Yom Kippur last year, that this would be the year she would die, she was left to the last minutes. Now, again, you can say, oh, hooey, 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 yes. But these are traditions. And if you are raised with Jewish education, the fact that she died on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, in the last moments of the old year, is powerful stuff. Jews don't focus on heaven and hell. I didn't know if we believed in a heaven or hell, because I never heard, in all the times I was ever in the synagogue, I never heard it mentioned. So it doesn't, it's very unlike Christianity. You know, that if you do good things, you're rewarded and you go to heaven. If you do bad things, you're going to hell. That's just not Jewish. It reminds me of something, a startling question of friend's mother once asked me. It has to be about 25 years ago. We were having dinner, and she, knowing I was Jewish, said to me, "What I've never understood about your religion is, what's the payoff?" And I said, payoff? What? She said, "Well, what? If you don't believe in heaven or hell, why would you live a good life? What's in it for you? What's the payoff?" And that was so mind-blowing to me. Because if you're raised as a Jew, there is never an idea that you live a good life because you're going to get rewarded. The whole thing is you work to be good humans to other humans because you work toward justice and peace because they are their own rewards. In fact, the pursuit of justice is one of the highest callings of Judaism. My dad, when he was in high school, wrote an essay, which I came upon once in a trunk in our attic, and it was titled, "Justice, We Pursue Thee." And that was coming directly from his religious experience, the pursuit of justice is one of the highest callings. And the fact that if a system is unjust, it is unsustainable. I'm going to share some things from an article I read. And some of it I've sort of already mentioned. It is said that a person who passes on Rosh Hashanah is a tzaddik, a good and righteous person. But it's important to note that, you know, you've heard maybe the word tzedakah, which is often said to be charity. It's not charity. A tzaddik is somebody who actively works toward justice. Tzedakah is not a benevolent contribution given to somebody so you're nice. It is actually to be viewed as a balancing of the scales, an active action working toward justice. So you give money to the food bank not to gain favor with God or to see yourself as a good person. You are correcting an imbalance in a system. You are creating equity, and that is the work of the tzaddik, the work of righteousness, the work of this righteous woman, her life's work. One of the highest forms of tzedakah is where neither the giver nor the receiver are known. So anonymous gifts are higher gifts. This allows both for the dignity of the person receiving it, so they will owe nothing to anybody, and for the giver to be free of personal motivation. In other words, we should help create a more just world for the benefit of people we don't know and without any expectation of praise or reward in this life or any that might come after. So I want to read from this article now. When we say that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a tzaddik, we don't just mean she was a nice person. What we are saying is that she was a thoughtful person who worked tirelessly to create a more just world, a world that would perpetuate equality and access, a world that wasn't reliant on charity, a world that was better for people she did not know, would never know, and all of this without the expectation of praise. That is what it means to be a tzedakah, a tzaddik. The female word is, I think, tzedeket. Nobody personifies this more in their life than this woman. So you hear now, may her memory be for a blessing. That is what Jews say when a loved one dies. May her memory be for a blessing. And what that means is not may we remember her fondly or may her memory be a blessing to us. The blessing that is implied is this: may you be like Ruth. May you live up to her example. May you work to keep her goodness alive. We do this by remembering her. We do this by speaking her name. We do this by carrying on her legacy. We do this by continuing to pursue justice, righteousness, and sustainability. So when you hear, may her memory be for a blessing, understand that what you are hearing is she was a worker for justice. May we become a credit to her name. So this is tough stuff. Joe Biden spoke directly to Republican senators yesterday here is what he said. Please, please follow your conscience. Of course, he made the mistake there of imbuing them with a conscience. But Joe Biden thinks the best of people. Please, he said, follow your conscience. Don't vote to confirm anyone nominated under the circumstances President Trump and Senator McConnell have created. Don't go there. Uphold your constitutional duty, your conscience. Let the people speak. Cool the flames that have been engulfing our country. It speaks to the terrifying place we are in American history that those heartfelt words, those pleading words, will fall on deaf ears. And how sad that we know that. Let's be clear. So many things that we have always felt were solid, no longer are. We never, ever could have imagined that things that we just took for granted all our lives, that these institutions, the U.S. Senate, the Supreme Court, the president, that all of these would somehow be treated with care. And that their integrity would be a comfort. That is gone. And if the Republicans force this vote and put another justice on the court, they will be destroying, and they know it, the integrity of an entire branch of our government. They've done a hell of a job with another branch, and Donald Trump has tried to finish off the third. Think of this. A slim majority. Let's say Collins, Murkowski, Romney. Let's say those three say, I can't go along with this. Well, fine. So they'll put a jurist on the court with a one vote margin. When the U.S. is akin to a tinder box with fires raging round it, understand that the Senate, Republicans, represent a distinct minority of the American people. We have talked about this before. You get two senators from Wyoming, you get two senators from, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, all these big states with no people in them. Two Republicans in the Senate, two Republicans in the Senate. And all the people of these big states like New York State, California, they get two senators as well. If you add up all of the Americans that are represented by the Republican senators, you don't even get to 40% of the American people. So that these Senate Republicans literally in the 11 and three quarter hour would push through when they wouldn't do it for Obama, who, and it was a year before his term was up. So you've got these Republican senators representing a distinct minority of the American people. You have a president who is about to nominate someone who himself holds the office of the presidency, even though a majority of the American people voted for his opponent. He is only there because of the vestiges of a compromise worked out to keep the slave states from bolting when the founding fathers were trying to establish a country. That's what the Electoral College was. A minority president wanted by a minority of us, a Senate representing a minority of us, are going to essentially stage a coup right in front of our eyes and take over the only branch of government that they are going to hold, because the people resoundingly are going to sweep them out of the Congress and sweep them out of the White House. And then everything that that Democratic-controlled Congress and Democratic president try to do will hit a stone wall. In the Supreme Court. So even when we throw the Republicans out, they will impede the desires of the majority of the American people for decades and decades to come. Dave from Washington writes, what's more moral, doing the right thing because of either promise of reward or threat of punishment, or doing the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do? Yeah, that's it. This idea that people will only do right if they're either in fear of damnation or desirous of everlasting life is a pretty, I think, offensive way of looking at, I'll just speak for myself, at me. I am perfectly capable of knowing what is right and what is wrong, and I choose what is right, mostly, because it's the right thing to do. I don't understand why that's so hard and why people think that wouldn't happen, or people who think that if you don't believe in a God, you won't have a moral compass. What kind of nonsense is that? So some of the greatest scoundrels in the world have been religious people, believed in God, the worst, and some of the best. Some of the most wondrous people in the world have not believed in God or hell and heaven. Why do people think that? I'm sorry, Dave, I interrupted you. Back to Dave. There is no morality when your behavior is based on either the promise of reward or the threat of punishment. That is how we train our children and our pets. Well, morality stems from unselfish acts, where you yourself stand nothing to gain. The old virtue is its own reward thing. Yeah. Dave then says, throw that at the self-righteous bastards and watch them squirm. They don't squirm. Squirming requires a level of capacity for shame. Right? I mean, look at Lindsey Graham. He didn't even bat an eye when that, you know, video came up of him saying, you use this against me if I'm... None of them. None of them. McConnell, they don't even miss a beat. Turning on a dime. Hypocrites. Liars. And what is it that they are teaching the American people, the children? What are they teaching them? They are teaching them that the people that are their leaders are scoundrels, are liars. They are absolutely modeling that behavior. So, guys, Kurt sent me a letter he wrote to Senator Toomey. And if you think about it, why don't you? Or call him up. Call Senator Toomey because he's one of the votes, right? No one is mentioning him as somebody with a conscience who might not do this. But let him hear from you. And let him know when he runs for re-election in 2 years, he is so gone. So Kurt says he wrote this to Toomey. Regarding the decision to move quickly to replace Justice Ginsburg, please tell me, are there any persons with honor in your party? There is certainly no prohibition on the Senate moving quickly to replace a Supreme Court justice. This is not a constitutional issue. It is, however, an issue of honor. 4 years ago, Republicans insisted that there should be no votes on a justice in an election year. Several have maintained this stance since. But the example of Senator McConnell and others in your party is telling the country that our leaders are not to be taken at their word. I guess that's where that thought came from, that I had said that that's what they're teaching. I ripped it off from Kurt. Kurt goes on, you cannot be trusted. Your best example to the young people of our country today is do whatever is necessary to win. Lie if you must. Cheating, it's a relative term. No one really expects you to follow through on your commitments, pay your bills, be a good father or husband or anything else. Live for the moment. Are all of you scoundrels? Getting what you want is the only abiding principle in America today. I liked America better when it had some principles. Chuck writes, the Supreme Court was always intended to give the last word, to give final remedy when all else failed. It was always intended to have justices without bias, justices who are constitutional scholars. One day, historians will show that the politicization of the Supreme Court was the beginning of the end of American democracy. We are going down a dangerous road here, and there is no return. I have a caller. I hope I haven't kept them waiting too long. Caller, go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, it's a sad thing what happened over the weekend.
God.
Now, I don't want to second-guess anything. And she stayed in hers because that's what she felt to do. But in the when you think about it, wouldn't it have been smart when Obama got in there? And they
if she had resigned, yeah.
Resigned. If you really wanted to keep somebody in there, it was tilted towards what you believed it. I just don't understand because she was in her late 70s. I mean, I'm not going to second-guess why.
No, don't.
She's, good at what she did, but in the future, wouldn't you think that's how you keep a majority?
Well, they serve a life term, and I don't know. She appeared to be such a survivor. If that were the case, I don't know. Then they shouldn't serve life terms, I guess. I don't know.
They shouldn't. I don't think they should.
But this is where, our Constitution hinders us in many ways. My God, there's a lot of things that don't work anymore for us. And certainly the Electoral College is a biggie. That's the biggie. Because we have minority rule now. The people can vote till they're blue in the face, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. The minority party, which is what the Republicans are, get complete control of the Senate, which allows them to have amazing control over the judiciary because they're the ones who sign off on judges, these lifetime appointments. And because every state, no matter population, gets the same amount of senators, that doesn't work anymore. Maybe it worked when there were honorable people. Ginsburg, when she was nominated, there were only 3 dissenting votes. I mean, that meant that wasn't all that long ago. That meant that it's very recently that we have become so politicized that we can't stand voting for someone who's not in our party.
Right. Well, that being said, I still think by 10:05, Biden will be president election night, and we will win big. We'll win the Senate. We'll have the House, and we can stack the friggin' court, and we can play hardball instead of playing baby ball. We got to play hardball with these people and be just as ruthless as they are. That's the only way you're going to get anything done or anything going to change. You got to play fight fire with fire. Democrats have a kind of little weak in the knees a lot of times. They when I'm playing.
Well, we
nice,
don't play dirty. It's not, and I don't know. Packing the court, I don't know. First of all, how do we do that? Wait a minute. How do we do that? Let's say we take the – how do we do that? Doesn't it ends up being someone brings a case against it and says that's unconstitutional, and that case would go where? To the existing Supreme Court.
Well, yeah. Now, what is the closest?
But I guess if we've already packed the court, I don't know. It doesn't do anything to help people's perception that these institutions are. I don't know what to say. None of us have ever lived in a situation where we are seeing our country come apart. But that is what we're living in right now, and it's terrifying.
Pelosi talking about impeachment of Trump. I don't even –
I don't know. That would have been that's a desperate act, but maybe once there's an impeachment, it ties his hands or ties, who knows? They are just everybody's throwing everything they can at the wall right now.
November can't get too soon.
No. I hear you. Hey, thank you. Yeah,
okay,
bye. Bye-bye. Oh, my. Okay. Kurt also sent me an obit. I got a... You know, when you read these obits and you think, damn, I should have known that guy. Some of you might. This is an obituary in the Butler Eagle, which, by the way, is the same owners as who owns City Paper. So it's the Butler Eagle, and it says this: Mark Kennedy Williams Jr., 70, of Wexford. After having warned us all that none of us are getting out of here alive, was cleared for final takeoff on September 14th, 2020. Born May 20th, 1950, in Pittsburgh, he excelled at asking snarky questions about the lifelong merits of algebra and hanging out with his friends on Bunny Hill as a student in Richland High School's class of 68. Fascinated with aeronautics and aviation his entire life, he attended the Pittsburgh Institute of Aeronautics. Because he did not suffer from painful bone spurs and was neither a loser nor a sucker, Mark served as a mechanic and instructor in the U.S. Air Force upon being drafted in 1970. He was honorably discharged as a staff sergeant in 1974. He began his career as an aircraft mechanic at Butler Graham Airport, then proudly worked as lead mechanic with U.S. Airways from 1981 until 2004. If you flew out of Pittsburgh International during that time, chances are good he ensured your flight was safe. He could fix anything, make anything grow, and was exceptionally good at solving crossword puzzles. Mark is survived by 3 children, as well as many friends in what he called Greater Downtown Wexford. Per his wishes, there will be no funeral or visitation. In lieu of donations or flowers, Mark, a lifelong Republican, requested with a very colorful vocabulary to elect Joe Biden in November. Yeah. So there's that. Speaking of aviation, I saw this and I couldn't even believe it. There are some airlines, I know Qantas is one, that'd be the Aussies, right, who are advertising, I'm looking for this story so I can not muck it up, but of course I can't find it. They're offering flights to nowhere. Which is to say, I've got it. No. Flights that take off from one airport and then land at the same airport 7 hours later. So you never, it's point A to point A. Flights to nowhere, and it's like a 7-hour flight. I mean, to me, I just tolerate flights because I'm going to end up someplace different than where I got on. But this is quite the opposite of that. And the tickets can be pricey. I can't find the article. So, I mean, as much as like, I know where it is. Hang on. I mean, the flights can be like $3,000 some people paid. I guess the first one they did sold out in 10 minutes. Yeah. Oh, they haven't done it yet, but it sold out. It's going to depart Sydney October 10th, return on October 10th to Sydney with no stops. What they're going to do is fly lower than they would normally fly. So it'll be like they're going to go on a sightseeing tour from the air. So they've been promised views of the Great Barrier Reef and some Uluru monolith that I don't know about, and the Australian outback. Prices ranged all the way up to $3,700. Those are Aussie dollars. That's like $2,765. And they're doing it because I guess some people just miss flying. I don't know. I mean, why would you do that? Being on a I don't get it. But the airlines say they probably won't make any money from it, and they don't think though they'll lose any money from it. But anyway, flights to nowhere. And others are doing it too, mostly in Asia. Asian airlines have offered similar options. Taiwan, Japan, Singapore is considering flights to nowhere. Man, I mean, I so would not do that. I guess that's for people who really like to be in the, I mean, I do like, once I'm up there, looking, I like a window seat because I like looking at the country. I do. And even trying to figure out where the heck I am. You see a cluster, you see a little town down there, and you try to figure out what it is. I mean, I love that, or the glory of the expanse of this nation. But, geez. Henry writes, Lynn, putting another conservative judge on the Supreme Court has everything to do with this election. Nominating a woman will garner votes. Nominating a Bible thumper will help to swing votes. And should the election have to be decided by the Supreme Court again, the win is in the bag. Yeah, that's right. Well, you could say the win is in the bag anyway. Well, now wait. We got an 8-person court right now. But yeah, it's 5-3. There's only three what you can consider liberal justices. They've got it. They're already in fine shape, even if they don't. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. Oh, yeah, and then there's this happiness as we, I guess, have we topped 100,000? If we haven't, it'll happen in a second or two. Barbara sent me this happy headline. Apocalyptic. Epidemiologists warn that America is headed for a very grim fall. Well, yeah. Tell us something we don't know. Tell us something we don't know. Yeah, Bree is saying, yeah, Singapore Airlines is now hosting flights to nowhere. I just don't get that. Oh. What else do I have here? Oh, speaking of Singapore, is this Singapore? No, it's Thailand. So here's something Thailand's doing. I love this. I really love this. The Thai government is so angry with people who visit their national parks and leave trash. So I guess what people do is they rent like these tents or, you know, little cabins essentially. And if they leave them in a, you know, with all this garbage in them, the Thai government collects all the garbage, sticks it in a box, and mails it off to the people who left it. So that when they get this box, they open it up and there's all this garbage they left. And it includes a note from their government saying, you forgot something at Kyo Yai National Park. And then they say they'll blacklist anybody who they do that, who have to do that for. It reminds me of a story, and I don't remember now who told it to me, but it'd be some brave, it was a woman, and it was here in Pittsburgh, and she was sitting behind a car on the Boulevard of the Allies downtown, and the car's window opens, driver's window opens, and they drop a McDonald's bag out, you know, full of garbage. And she jumped out of her car, ran up, grabbed the bag, and said to the guy who dropped it, excuse me, you dropped this, and gave it right back to him. Now, you know, I'd be afraid to do that. Because the kind of people who would do that are the kind of people who would, you know, shoot you, I guess. There's people with no sense of any social contract or care of anything that is not, that they don't perceive as their own, right? I just, wow. So have any of you turned your heat on? I'm just asking for a friend. I have not, because I just can't. It's so awful the first time you do. You think, oh, damn, I can't. But my God, it was 64 in my house when I woke up. But what I decided to do is I have a little space heater, and it's staring at me right now, keeping me nice and toasty until the sun can warm the house up a little bit. But it just seems like this fall came on so fast, didn't it? I'm just in denial because it's going to be such a rough time, and we're heading into such a rough time, and it's going to be harder in the winter because our ability to be with others and to have that support of others will be much more difficult. And as, I forget who said this, even let's say Biden is elected, Senate turns to the Dems, so what, they say. The cultural ecosystem, the fever swamps of social media that amplify right-wing craziness will remain. Trump will remain. You think he's going to stop tweeting? Fox News and Facebook will continue to validate the biases and conspiracy theories of a nation that's increasingly proud of its ignorance, proud of its denial of science. Nicholas Kristof says, of his home state of Oregon. Good God. Remember, I told you the story about those guys in Oregon who were refusing to leave because they thought Antifa, if they left their homes, because they were told to evacuate because of the fires, Antifa was going to come and destroy their 9,000 population town. And Nicholas Kristof writes, I mean, some citizens in Oregon actually set up armed roadblocks to stop cars because they were looking for Antifa arsonists. Kristof said, you know, in his years as a foreign reporter, he said, I have seen militias set up armed checkpoints in Yemen, in Sudan, but I never expected to see them in my beloved home state. He talks about the hysteria. I mean, we're a country gone mad. Hysteria in rural towns that they really think they're going to be attacked by left-wing and anarchists and Antifa. Now, where do they get that? Facebook, Fox News, social media, right-wing radio. And they believe it. These are the people they trust. So all over America, these people living in small towns are like, are pulling out their guns and getting ready to fight back. I remember about a month ago telling you about these idiots who went to Gettysburg because they social media told them that a bunch of Antifa people were coming to Gettysburg. I think it might have been for July 4th. I don't know. I can't remember. And they all showed up in camo and guns, and nobody was there but them. And what Kristof points out is that happens all the time. And when these invaders that they're armed to the teeth to repel never show up, and because they never do, because they don't exist, you would think that that would make them realize they'd been duped. But it doesn't. Instead, they take the opposite lesson from it. Whoa! We scared them away. They feel is eroding. The ugliness also raises a question. If we see this unraveling now, when the science is clear and the rumors are so manifestly groundless, and he's just talking about the fires, then what might happen in November if the election results are close? Well, I don't mean to be a, is it Cassandra? I don't mean to be a negative, but I do want us all to be realists as we head into an unknown with a lot of red flags and indications that we could be living in an incredibly historic moment. And you don't want to live in an incredibly historic moment, because usually that's some horrible upheaval. And I'm afraid we are. And if you talk to anybody over in Europe right now, or I suppose anywhere in the world, they're looking over at us, and they cannot believe what they're seeing. You think you're scared? They're scared. Because the whole order of the world that has existed since World War II appears to be crumbling. Terrifying. And if you aren't afraid, you're not paying attention. You're in some kind of denial. And I know we can't live always in a state of terror, but we must, for Ruth Bader Ginsburg's state, take that feeling of dread and turn it into resolve and not lose sight of what it is we're trying to do. We are trying to save this grand experiment of democracy, or as close to it as we got, because it does appear to be unraveling before our eyes. So let RBG continue to be our leader, our exemplar. She was indomitable. She was dogged. She was calm. And she still found time to take joy in life. Let's try to follow her example. Thank you all. I'll be back tomorrow. Hang in there.
Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.